walking back from proclaiming the gospel down there in the midst of the people, it was a gospel lesson about divorce or something. And I heard someone along the side of the pew say, "Good luck with that one." And I smiled back at her as I walked toward the pulpit. Sometimes the gospel is like that. I don't much like this turtle for any number of reasons, and I struggled mightily to come up with anything at all to say about it today. Except sometimes it does seem like the weeds of evil or the evil tares are growing up right alongside the good wheat. Sometimes even hiding in the wheat, hard to spot. Sometimes evil disguises itself as good, while good is accused of evil. Sometimes we are reluctant to come out and say in a forthright and sure way that something or someone is evil, because we know our own faults and shortcomings well enough. No one wants to label themselves evil. A sinner, yes, we know and admit to, but not evil, right? The other problem of the parable is the explanation Matthew provides feels a lot like another parable. The devil, for example, is that a supernatural being? Or do we understand it differently now, as a metaphor for a force for evil? Likewise with angels bringing in the harvest. Remember when people used to say, "The devil made me do it"? We don't say that anymore, maybe because it was never meant seriously, but because we also recognize that we have our own agency. We are responsible for our own actions. So the devil, seen as a supernatural being with horns, well, we're just not so sure about that. It seems like a moral cop-out to say someone else made me do it. And how do we separate the wheat from the tares? Well, apparently, in this parable, we don't. But God will sort it out on Judgment Day. When I was writing the abridged article, which lately has been a series on the history and polity of the Episcopal Church, its founding and its governance, when I was writing this week, I was struck again by the fact that the Episcopal Church in the United States, for more than 100 years, deemed chattel slavery, human trafficking, a political issue. And in order to keep the peace in the Episcopal Church between the churches in the South and those in the North, they said, "Well, slavery, that's politics. And we don't talk about politics in church." It is appalling to me that they did not see slavery as a moral issue. Long after the Quakers in 1758 and the Methodists in 1774 condemned slavery, long after the Presbyterians in 1818, the Catholics in 1839, and the Baptists in 1845 all condemned slavery, the Episcopal Church was still supporting it, all the way through to the end of the Civil War. And let's face it, it was also an economic issue. I have to wonder if those good Episcopalians even used scripture, Ephesians 6:5, to justify this, to say, "Slaves, obey your masters," and some such. Or they said, "We just agreed to disagree." It wasn't until 2006 that the Episcopal Church formally apologized for slavery. The Episcopal Seminary I attended in Alexandria, Virginia, was built in 1823, almost entirely by slave labor. In recent years, like just in the last 10 or so, Virginia Theological Seminary has been paying reparations to the descendants, because there were pretty good records of who those slaves were that built Virginia Theological Seminary, which incidentally was also used as a hospital during the Civil War. I'm sure that there are some who feel feel that the endowment of Virginia Episcopal Seminary should not be spent on reparations. Now, all this is not to disparage the Episcopal Church we love, but to make a very different point. We all find it distasteful when a preacher ventures into politics. We should stay in our lane. And preaching politics turns the pulpit into a bully pulpit. But it seems we sometimes get confused about what is a political issue and what is a moral issue. And morality is indeed the lane of the church. One time someone said to me at coffee hour, rather angrily as I recall, that he thought I was preaching universal socialism. First off, I didn't know there was such a thing. But after coffee hour, I went back to look at my sermon to try to see why he would think that. But in fact, on further review, I believe I was preaching the gospel, which can sound a lot like socialism. But of course, the gospel existed before there were any such isms, before there was socialism or fascism or communism. Jesus' care for the poor and the outcast, the widow and the disabled, I suppose that could sound like socialism. And you know what really sounds like socialism? It's Acts chapter 4, verse 32, which says, all the disciples shared everything in common, and when someone owned property, they would sell it and lay the proceeds at the disciples' feet to be distributed among the faithful. That sounds like some extreme socialism. And when we reflect on our current ultra-polarized political situation, there is a lot about that which is no longer political, but moral. Some things do cross the line from political to moral. White supremacy, for example, is a moral issue. Also, it is evil. Denying people habeas corpus is a moral issue. The Epstein files could be interpreted as a political tetherball punched back and forth, but the testimony of the victims and their cry for justice is a moral issue. Unjust wars and genocide, these are moral issues, and if the church cannot take a stand on such things, who will? That is another good example. We can be and remain a political ally, and also stop sending weapons when a country is committing genocide. And so what are we to do about the tares amidst the wheat? Can we name what is evil and what is good? To gain a little insight and look back on our history as a church and ask the question, how will this issue be viewed 100 years from now? We can also work to develop our own conscience, our own intellect, our own morality, to discern right from wrong, to live our baptismal covenant, which is a good place to start. Our baptismal covenant is quite literally the place to start, so that we might bear witness and bear good fruit in the midst of many tares in a broken world. Yes, bear the fruit of love and justice, in some cases yielding 100-fold, in some 60, in some 30. Pressed down, shaken together, and running over, God's grace and mercy made available and made manifest in us.